Psalms, if you would, Psalm 104. And before we begin there, let me thank all of you for being here tonight. It would be rude of me not to do that. And a number of you are guests tonight. You don't regularly worship with this local church, but you obviously worship elsewhere. And many of you who are here are friends of mine. I consider you good friends, and you've been great influences to me for many years. I always say I'm not going to start calling names, but I got to call two names tonight. Bill and Sandy Hodge are here. And when I saw, it warmed my heart to see Bill, but it really warmed my heart to see Sandy. Because Bill and Sandy worshiped with me at the University Church in Tampa for a lot of years. And Bill served as one of our elders. Did a wonderful job. And meant a lot to me personally and helped me a lot personally. It helped me a lot spiritually. And because of that relationship, among other things, though, I cherish their friendship and their influence on me. Something that I will remember and something that I'm indebted to them for a long time. But I'm thankful. And it's good to see them. And others of you, you know who you are, who have been such an important part of my life. Over the course of my life and whatever it is that I am, you have played a very important part in that. And so let me just thank you for that and thank you for coming tonight. You know, when you live in this part of the world, getting someplace is not easy. I'm planning to go south of the city Wednesday morning thinking that it might take an hour. And in talking to Devin and Roger and Mike tonight and asking them, the phrase 3 hours came out of their mouth. And I just about panicked. And then they said, well, probably not 2 hours, probably more like 2:45. I said, well, we're not going to talk about it. I'm just going to go and then I'll try to get there when I can and I'll leave and come home when I can or come back when I can. So that's what I'm going to do. But I know many of you have traveled great distance to come and your effort, I appreciate very much your effort. And I hope that the time that we spend tonight will be beneficial to all of us as we seek to grow spiritually. Psalm 104. I want you to think about, as we think about our lesson tonight, it's trusting like he's coming back tomorrow. Our theme for the week and these lessons have to do with thinking about the urgency of how we live our lives and the things that God has ask of us are things that we cannot continue to put off. And I have said to you, as I said to you Sunday morning, I think a lot of people who are disciples of Jesus Christ have some idea that they're going to put off what it is that they need to do until things in their life get better, or they feel like there's a better advantage of them to do it at a later time. And the sense of urgency is what I want all of us to see and to feel. And to take action about, because the fact of the matter is, as we talked about yesterday, the day of the Lord can come at any time, and we must be ready, and we must be found as those who would serve him. Psalm 104, beginning in verse 10, he sends the springs into the valleys, and they flow among the hills. They give drink to every beast of the field. The wild donkeys quench their thirst. By them the birds of the heavens have their home, and they sing among the branches. He waters the hills from his upper chambers, and the earth is satisfied with the fruit of your works. He causes the grass to grow for the cattle and vegetation for the service of man, that he may bring forth food from the earth. And wine that makes glad the heart of man, oil to make his face shine, and bread which strengthens man's heart. The trees of the Lord are full of sap, the cedars of Lebanon which he planted, where the birds make their nest. The stork has her home in the fir trees, and the high hills are for the wild goats. The cliffs are a refuge for the rock badgers. He appointed the moon for the seasons, and the sun knows it's going down, and you make darkness in its night, in which all the beasts of the forest creep about. The young lions roar after their prey and seek their food from God. When the sun rises, they gather together and lie down in their dens. And man goes out to his work and to his labor until the evening. O Lord, how manifold are your works. In wisdom you have made them all. This is just one of many passages in both the Old and New Testament that help us understand that God is at work. He does things for his creation. We use the word providence, we use the English word providence to indicate that God provides certain things in our world. And Psalm 104 shows that God is doing just that, that He is superintending over that. He is overseeing all of that in our world. And that's part of what Psalm 104 states to us. We should never think that God created it all and then He backed off. That's what the old 16th and 17th century issue of deism, that's even prevalent today. It's the idea that God would create everything and then He would just back away and let it function on its own. And that's not the case. We're told in Scripture that God does provide. It's not to be left alone. And even the mundane things that God has in mind, like the grass growing and the sun shining and Him giving food and providing sustenance for even animals and even for us, those are not mundane things, but those are things which God has done and continues to do. Now, I'm going to suggest to us, however, that providence is not an easy topic to understand. And I'm going to get to the trusting aspect of this in just a moment. That's my plan anyway tonight. And I want all of us to understand, and I don't have to say this because we all know this, none of us, I believe, understand providence as keenly as we would like to. It's the nature of what it is. How God provides for us, how He acts on our behalf are things that are difficult. But I will say this, that all of us are very curious about what it is that God does and how He works. And so tonight as we begin, I want to try to put in our minds, we're going to ultimately get to the trust factor, but I think we have to understand some things about providence and about some things even about prayer as we think about that before we get to the trust factor. And when we understand, at least in my mind, when we understand this, I think that it helps us put our trust and our confidence in God when things go well in our lives or when things go poorly in our lives. And I'm looking at an audience tonight that I know that all of those things have happened to this audience. No matter where I preach this lesson, I am confident that I'm talking to people who have shared both good and bad in their lives. And I'm familiar with this church enough to know that's the case here. But if you came tonight thinking about the fact that maybe all those questions could be answered, that's not going to happen. But I do want to offer some things for you to think about that may challenge your thinking and may hopefully help you. When we think about providence, you know, Psalm 104 verifies the fact that God, it's what I would call general providence. God has provided these things. In nature, He provides, and God has set all that in motion. Psalm 8 and verse 3 says, "When I consider your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars which thou hast ordained, what is man that thou art mindful of him?" And so God ordained nature. He created that. And another aspect, I think, of general providence, not just the natural thing, not just what God has produced in nature, but what He allows to happen is this passage in Ecclesiastes 9 and verse 11, which we're all familiar with. Time and chance happens to all. Now, I know that's not what we want to hear. When things happen in our lives, both good and bad, sometimes I think that can be attributable to the fact that simply time and chance does happen to all men. We sometimes might call that happenstance. We don't like that explanation, but I think that's a fair explanation because God Himself says that time and chance does happen to all. So there are some things in a general sense that general providence allows that we're all familiar with. But I want you to think for a moment about what I call special providence, an aspect of providence in which God does some things for a specific reason. And there's no doubt that God's going to do that. We're going to look at some things. The question is, how does He do those things? In Daniel, the 4th chapter in verse 25, Daniel explains Nebuchadnezzar's second dream. And about God, he says in verse 25, "The Most High rules in the affairs of men." You know, God does that. God did it then, and God certainly does it now. Now, how does He do that? Well, we simply do not know how God does that. But the passage clearly tells us that God somehow interjects or intervenes or somehow puts Himself in a position, even in our world, to affect the affairs of men. How He does it, I don't know. It's not up to me to know. It's not up to Him to tell me, but I know that He does that. So that is one sense in which His special providence is seen in our world. But I want you to turn to Acts 2. I want you to look at two passages that are found in the sermon which the apostles preached in Acts the second chapter. These are familiar words to this audience, I'm quite sure. But I want you to consider God's special providence in the scheme of redemption. I want you to think about what happened and what were Peter and the other apostles preaching, beginning in verse 22 of Acts 2. This is what Luke records for us. Men of Israel, hear these words, Jesus of Nazareth, a man attested by God to you by miracles, wonders, and signs, which God did through him in your midst, as you yourselves also know. Him being delivered by the determined purpose and foreknowledge of God, you have taken by lawless hands, you have crucified, and you have put him to death. And then verse 24 says, whom God raised up. So we go from that which is miraculous to that which is non-miraculous, to that, again, which is miraculous. In those two verses. Think about what God did. God delivered Jesus by the determined purpose and foreknowledge of God. Now, to get into that deeply is something that I'm not capable of doing. And I don't know that any man is to the degree that we would like to know. But we know that this was a determined purpose and it was part of the foreknowledge of God. And God arranged all of that by providence. He did that which was miraculous in those amazing signs and wonders which it says he did. And he did those things which were non-miraculous as well. He saw to it, according to verse 23, him being delivered by the determined purpose and foreknowledge of God, you have taken by lawless hands, you have crucified and put to death. God used men, not in any kind of miraculous way, but God used those men to identify what his purpose was and to use those men for his intended purpose. That's what this passage tells us. He did some amazing things as well through miracles, and that was for his intended purpose as well. But God arranged all of that by providence. Sometimes he did it supernaturally, and sometimes he did it by natural causes. Nothing miraculous about his arrest. Nothing miraculous about his trials or his scourging or his crucifixion. But God was using, you see, free will to accomplish his purpose. The miracles, as I said, are amazing. They do create wonder. But what's interesting to me about this is that God can and does act in the lives of men to accomplish his will. But here is the summary point. When we look at miracles which God did, and of course, we don't see those today. Those are no longer needed today. Those no longer occur today. But to us, general providence and special providence look the same. We don't know if God is allowing that to happen in some general way, or if he is interjecting himself in some special way to accomplish his intended purpose. We simply cannot know that. But I want you to turn to Ecclesiastes 8 and notice a passage that through the years has meant much to me, not only in my preaching, when people have asked me questions that I have no idea how to answer, other than to point them to this passage. But it also has meant something to me as I think about what God has done in my life. Beginning in verse 16 of Ecclesiastes 8, notice what the wisdom writer says. He says, when I applied my heart to know wisdom, and to see the business that is done on earth, even though no one sees, no sleep, day or night. Then I saw all the work of God, that a man cannot find out the work that is done under the sun. For though a man labors to discover it, yet he will not find it. Moreover, though a wise man attempts to know it, he will not be able to find it. Now, I'm just going to tell you. You need to circle those verses. And you need to read those verses a lot. And when you're trying to figure out why it is and how it is and when it is that God is doing what God is doing, you just go back and read those verses and then you just go ahead and go about your business. Because you're not going to know much more before you started asking than you're going to know after you do ask and after you do some research and after you do some study. Now, I'm not talking about eliminating it and forgetting it altogether, but I'm saying what the wise man says is, I saw all the work of God, he said, that a man cannot find out the work that's done under the sun. We search, we want to know, but we can't find that. No one can find it. Even if a wise man attempts to know it, he'll not be able to find it. I know he wasn't talking about me. He was talking about me prior. But then he gets to a wise man and says, even a wise man can't know that. We are unable to look at events with certainty and say, I know God did that. And I want to say to us that I think we need to be careful how we say what we say. I think sometimes we attribute certain things to God, sometimes good, mostly good, and sometimes bad. And we don't know. We don't know with any certainty what God does. Now, I want to be careful how I say that. I don't want that to come across as if I'm saying that God doesn't help me in some way. And we're going to talk about that in just a moment. But folks, there is absolutely no way for us to know how it is that God helps us. We cannot know because general providence and special providence look exactly the same to us. Now, we speculate. 4 years ago this month, I received a phone call. And the man on the other line said, Kenny, this is Bob Griffin. And I knew Bob. Bob and I were friends. I don't know if he wasn't that formal, but he said, this is Bobby. And I said, well, hey, Bobby, how you doing? He said, fine. I said, I want to talk to you about something. I said, well, shoot away. He said, well, the elders here were wondering if you would consider moving to Alabama and working with us here at College View. And of course, I said, well, I'll tell you right up front that I appreciate you calling me, appreciate your interest, I appreciate your thinking that I might be someone you would be willing to consider to come up here and work with this church. And after we talked for maybe 10 or 15 minutes and made some decisions about when we might talk again, I hung up the phone. And my wife was standing there, and Beth said, she recognized by the conversation who it was, and she said, well, what do you think about that? And I said, well, I don't know. What do you think about that? She said, well, I don't know. What do you think about that? And I said, well, this is not going anywhere fast. So I said, well, you know, this is something that I've thought about. Not so much moving to Florence, Alabama, but I had given some thought to trying to be a full-time evangelist in earlier times in my life. And of course, we then began to have an exchange. And we did like all of you would suggest that we do. We got us a piece of paper. Here's the positives and here's the negatives. And then the next day we did it and they were different positives and different, you know how that stuff goes. And it was just driving us both kind of crazy, you know. And we thought about that, and considering the fact that there were some things which they said to me that they thought in their minds were some of my strengths, which I agreed with, understanding that I had plenty of weaknesses, which they found they agreed with that as well. And I told them that. I said, you know, if I come, here's what you're going to get in my judgment. And I told them what those things were. But there were several things, including the fact that my parents, both of whom were in their 80s, lived in Arkansas, and it had been a long time since I had been close enough to them to where I could go see them on a regular basis. And I finally looked at Beth a few days later. It was more than a few days later, but maybe a few weeks later. And I just said to her, I said, we need to go. And I said to her, I think this is God. I didn't say it like that, but for the point of the lesson, I'm going to say it that way. I said, I think this is God opening the door. I said, I think he's opening the door for the reasons that we've both talked about that say this is happening and this is happening and this is happening. And if we move, then these things will, it appears to be things that might fall into place. If I told you my story, I believe every single one of you would say to me, yeah, Kenny, there's something going on there. I believe God did have a hand, and I do. But I don't know. I don't know. I'm not discounting him. in any kind of way. I believe it with all of my heart, but I don't know that. I don't know that any more than Mordecai, when he sent word to Esther and he said, who knows whether or not you've come to the kingdom for such a time as this? You know, I'm thinking more. I mean, we're talking about the Jews remaining a nation. We're talking about the possible extermination of an entire nation. And for Mordecai not to know, if that's not something that God wanted, why couldn't he have said, you know, God talked to me and God told me this is what he was going to do. And this is what you need to do, Esther. And you don't need to be messing around with it. You just need to do what you know you ought to do. That's not what happened. He sent word to her and said, who knows? And of course, we know what happened in that story. Esther was in a position to help. And she did what she thought, evidently, she should do. And the same is true of Paul when he writes that short letter to Philemon. And basically he says, I think it's in verse 15 or 13, but basically he says, perhaps the fact that Onesimus, this has happened to Onesimus, maybe this is for his good and maybe it's for your good. But the Apostle Paul says, perhaps. You know, if anybody's going to get the direct message from God, I think it'd be Paul, don't you? I mean, Paul was pretty close to the Lord, I think. He'd already come to him in a vision. Why not another one say, you know, Paul, I'm telling you, this is why this has happened. This is why Onesimus has escaped, and this is why he needs to go back. And there are plenty of places like that. That help us understand that we simply don't know. And if people in the Bible didn't know, then why would we expect ourselves to know? Now, sometimes I look at people after I preach this and they're looking at me like, are you kidding me? You mean I can't know anything about that? Then they get all mad. I had a woman in Arkansas a few years ago. I mean, she was a friend of mine, and when it was over, I could tell she wasn't happy. She came from the back. And she said, now I want to ask you a question. And I don't think she beat the pulpit, but she beat something. She probably beat me, but she said, do you mean to tell me? I said, stop right there. I said, I don't know what you're about to say, but I don't think I meant to say what you think I meant to say. And she said, well, you said it. And I said, well, I thought to myself, well, here we go. We're going to be here a while. But I just want us to be clear. I know God helps me. I know God helps me because He said He would. That's how I know. I believe it with all of my heart. And I don't intend to be depressing or discouraging about that, but I think it's only fair that we really think about why it is that we talk like we do and we think like we do. And I think we just simply need to be careful. Yet I believe in the providence of God, we can trust Him because He does help us. 1 Peter 5:7, cast all your cares on Him. You know why He said do that? He said because He cares for you. Now, if the Bible is the Word of God, and it's all truth, and Peter said, you need to cast your cares on Him, and the reason is not because He's going to tell you how He's helping you, but because He does care for you. If that's the reason, then do that. That's what Peter said. And that moves us in a different direction to some degree, doesn't it? If we cast our cares on Him, then what happens? Let's think about that. If we're going to cast our cares on God, then what do? I'll tell you the first thing we do. We ask Him. We ask Him to help us. Peter said you need to cast your cares on Him. And the Lord said, I want you to talk to me. I want you to pray about that. And that's part of why. It's not the only reason, but it's part of why providence and prayer are so well connected. That's why we should pray daily, and prayer is praying daily. That's why in 1 Thessalonians 5, the passage we all know, pray without ceasing, I thought for many years. You know, what does that mean? I heard people talk about that and preach about that. You know, and it was like, you need to always be in an attitude of prayer. And I thought to myself, man, if that's what that is, I am missing it. There were some times when I was coaching that I'd be praying, but it didn't seem to do much good, so I thought, well, maybe I don't need to do that as much. But there were times in my life where I realized some things were going on, and I would pray, but I wasn't always in an attitude of prayer. And I sure wasn't a person that was praying without stopping. That's just something no one does. And then it dawned on me, what he's saying is that you need to be a person who consistently prays. And part of why we consistently pray is because we realize, although we don't know how, but we realize that God is providing for us and He is helping us and He is asking us to trust Him and He wants us to pray to Him because He does care for us. And He wants us to do that all the time. It has to do with consistency. And I'm gonna make an observation. How many times have I said that already? It's just Monday. You brethren are gonna get tired of him. I just want to make an observation. But I just want to make an observation. Did you get that? I want to make an observation. I don't know about your prayer life. I don't know what you do or don't do. But I do know what I do. And my problem in my prayer life, it's not that I don't believe God will help me or hear me, but I'm not consistent with that. Not as consistent as I want to be, and not as consistent as I believe God expects me to be. That's part of the admonition, is pray without ceasing. I want you to turn to Luke 18, please. A parable that is very well known, I think, again to you. Luke 18, the parable, we sometimes call it the unjust judge, or we can call it the persistent widow. There are a lot of things we call it, I think. But I want you to notice verse 1. This is what Luke says before he records this parable which Jesus stated. He says in Luke 18:1, "Then he spoke a parable to them that men ought always to pray and not lose heart." Is that you? Luke records, he says, men ought always to pray and not lose heart. And then he tells this parable. And this parable is about what he just said. And when I've read that, I thought, you know, that's me. Look at it. Men ought always to pray, but men don't always pray. They ought to pray always, but they don't always pray always. Who's that? That's me. Now, I'm not here to take a survey. I'm not here to ask for a show of hands. But I'm pretty confident. That if I could somehow ask for a show of hands about how many of you pray consistently, whatever you think that means, at least some of us would not be able to raise our hands. Because I think it's part human nature to not pray always. I think that's why Luke records this and why he tells this story, because he knows how we are. Men ought always to pray. Well, why don't they pray, Luke? Because they lose heart. Now, if I ask you how many of you have lost heart, I think every hand in this place would go up. Both my hands would go up. Have you lost heart before? Yeah. And what happens when you do that? Well, I don't pray like I should. Why? Because I'm inconsistent. And because I've lost the idea in my mind. It may be momentary lapse, but I've lost the fact that God is working in my life because He said He is. And what we want, I think, when it comes to, well, you know, God's working, and I'm glad that He's working, but Kenny, what I really want to know is, how's that happening? And so we get to a passage, a story like that's found, like it's recorded for us in 2 Kings 20. I love this story of Hezekiah. You remember this? Let me read it for you. You can follow along if you want to. This is Hezekiah, or I'm sorry, not Hezekiah. That's the joke, right? What is it? This is 2 Kings about Hezekiah. 2 Kings 20, in those days Hezekiah was sick and near death. And Isaiah the prophet, the son of Amoz, went to him and said to him, "Thus says the Lord, set your house in order, for you shall die and not live. Now, I'm going to stop right there and ask you, if somebody came to you and said, you got to set your house in order because you're not going to live, what would you do? I think I know what I'd do. I'd have this momentary shock, and then I'd probably do what verse 2 said. This is verse 2. Then Hezekiah turned his face toward the wall and prayed to the Lord, saying, remember now, O Lord, I pray, how I have walked before you in truth and with a loyal heart and have done what was good in your sight. And Hezekiah wept bitterly. And it happened before Isaiah had gone out into the middle court that the word of the Lord came to him saying, return and tell Hezekiah, the leader of my people, thus says the Lord, the God of David, your father, I have heard your prayer. I have seen your tears. Surely I will heal you. On the third day, you shall go up to the house of the Lord and I will add to your days 15 years. This solves our problem. When I pray, what many times is the problem with our prayers? What's many times the problem with the reaction that we have toward the reaction that we think God's given us? He's not hearing us. One of the strongest spiritually minded women in my life came to me a year or so ago. She didn't come directly to me, but we happened to be at the same place. And she came to me, and I knew she was distraught. I knew she was distraught. And she said to me, why doesn't God hear my prayer? And I thought to myself, she's asking me that question? I don't know of a stronger spiritually minded woman on this planet than the woman who asked me that question. And I thought to myself, if she's asking that question, who among us isn't asking the question? And I thought about it in my own life. You know, folks, there are things in my own life that I've been asking the Lord about for 8 to 10 years. Long time. I think it's a long time. Relative to my age and relative to how important it is to me, it's been a long time. There are things that Beth and I pray about each night that we've been praying about a long time. And from our vantage point, it doesn't look like the Lord's hearing us from our vantage point. And it's discouraging. I want to be honest with you. It's hard. We're not talking about life or death things. Not right now. But it's hard when a wife or a friend or a fellow brother or sister comes to you and says, I've been praying about this a long time, all my life. And the Lord apparently is not listening. And of course, my reaction to that is, well, no, he's listening. He hears his people. But that's a hard explanation. But it wouldn't be hard if what happened to Hezekiah happened to us. Hezekiah, he turned his face to the wall and he wept bitterly. And before Isaiah was gone, the word of the Lord came to Isaiah and said, go back in there and tell Hezekiah that I've heard his prayer. Now may I ask you a question? If you got your prayers answered that quickly, would you have any trouble praying? Would it be a burden for you to bow, to pray consistently, to pray without ceasing? Would it be a burden to you to pray without ceasing if before whomever it might be walked back into your house and said, hey, he heard you? Or if he didn't hear you? What if he just said to you, you know, the Lord's heard your prayer and he's not going to do what you want? I'd like that, wouldn't you? At least I know. I've been praying for 8 years about this and the Lord, you hadn't answered my prayer yet. Just tell me yes or no. Wouldn't you prefer it? Well, Hezekiah got 15 more years added to his life. So far, Lord, I hadn't heard anything. I don't know about it. And then I go back and I look at Luke 18 and I read that parable. And here's what that parable says. You follow or you listen. Luke 18 verse 2, there was in a certain city a judge who did not fear God nor regard man. And there was a widow in that city, and she came to him saying, get justice for me from my adversary. And he would not for a while, but afterward he said to himself, though I do not fear God nor regard man, yet because this widow troubles me, I will avenge her, lest by her continual coming she weary me. Now, let's set the context. You know the context. The woman comes in, she has an adversary. And this adversary is just destroying her life. And so she comes to this judge who has no regard either for man or for God. She continually comes to him. And what she is a pest. She's just bothersome. It's like all the time. She's coming to him all the time. And in verse 4 he said, he would not for a while, but afterward he said with himself, though I do not fear God nor regard man, because she troubles me, I will avenge her. I'm going to take care of this, lest her continual coming, she wearies me. If I don't do something one way or another, she's going to drive me crazy. That's a pretty easy parable to remember, which is what Jesus was doing. He wanted to remember the story. And my guess is they didn't forget that story. Parables that Jesus taught were not easily forgotten. That was part of why he told them. So they could remember the point, not a bunch of points, but the point. And then in verse 6, the Lord said, you need to hear what the unjust judge said. And here's the application. Here's what you need to understand. Shall not God avenge his own elect who cry out day and night to him, though he bears long with them? We're contrasting here a father in heaven, who is God, who does have regard for man, as opposed to an earthly judge who has no regard for God or man. And yet the Son of God, Jesus himself, says, shall not God avenge his own elect who cry out day and night to him, though he bears long with them? Have you ever cried out day and night to God? I've been at this, Beth and I, we've been at this prayer. We've been saying this prayer. We've been asking God in this particular way. I think it's been close to 8 years. And we I don't know if we're crying out day and night, but we are crying out. We're persistent. And I think about this parable. And I think about the God who loves his elect. And I think about the choices that I've made to become part of his elect. And so I read it again. Shall not God avenge his own elect to cry out day and night to him, though he bears long with them? And then I read verse 8. In which Jesus says, I tell you, that he will avenge them speedily. And I ask, are we on the same page with this speedily business? And then I remember the point that we made yesterday from 2 Peter 3. That with the Lord, one day is just 1,000 years and 1,000 years is one day. God's atemporal. God doesn't live in time. Time's irrelevant to God in that sense. I'm not irrelevant. But my time frame may not be his time frame. And that's what Jesus, who is his son, said. I tell you that he will avenge them speedily. Who? Who's the? The elect. What is the elect doing? The elect are crying out to him day and night. And then the last part of verse 8 is the key, folks, to trusting God. Here's the key. This to me, this just shouts. Listen. Nevertheless, when the Son of Man comes, will he really find faith on the earth? You think about that. There's a sense in which that there's a disconnect there. Well, what is he talking about? what Jesus is saying about himself is that when I come back, he's saying, when I come back, what is it that he's looking for? He's looking for faith. What kind of? He's looking for trust. He's looking for people who've been praying for the same thing, who are his elect. If they've been praying for 8 years and apparently he's not giving them what they're asking for, he says, I'm looking for faith. That's what I'm looking for. And my time frame is not your time frame. My perspective is not your perspective. And my view of what's going on in the world and what's going on even in your life, yes, I am providing for you, but I'm providing for you as Jesus says, let your will be done, Lord, not mine. And so, I look at Beth and I say, faith. We gotta have faith. And it may be that he'll never answer the prayer that we're asking in the way we want it answered. But that's really irrelevant, folks. What's relevant is when the Son of Man returns, will he really find faith on the earth? That's what's at stake. And we've got to live every day trusting in him like he's coming tomorrow. Like he's coming tomorrow. Or like he's coming tonight. But if it's tonight or if it's tomorrow or if it's 2,000 or 10,000 or 20,000 more years or even further beyond than that, of course none of us will be here. But the issue is while we live in time, will we trust in him? Understanding that he cares for us. And he wants us to pray because he wants to know what it is that we need him to do for us. And we cast all our cares on him, and we do that because we know he cares for us. And then we have faith. And I know that's hard. I'm talking to some people tonight. That you've faced difficulties that I've not faced. There's no way I can go to you and say, I know how you feel. I have no idea how you feel. Do you know what I see in you? I know you pray. I know you pray about those things that are on your heart. But you know what I see in you? I see that you don't quit. And you don't quit because you have faith. And that's all that matters. That's what he's looking for. When he comes, will he find faith on the earth? Will he find people who have finally accepted, I'm still mad about it, Lord, but you know, no, that's not what he's looking for. He's looking for faith. That's all he's looking for. He's looking for faith. And that's what he wants from me. And when I have that kind of trust in him, it doesn't make it easier. It doesn't make the questions any easier to ask, nor does it make the questions any easier to answer, for sure. But it does give us a foundation. And it does give us a perspective that says, I'm going to put my full trust in Jesus Christ and in his Father. And I will tell you that the reason that I like to preach this lesson is because I need it. I'll be honest with you. I lose that focus and I lose that sight. And to a degree, I may lose that faith. And I preach it because I keep, this is a reminder, this is a continued reminder of what he's wanting from me. And so, you pray for me and I'll pray for you that we can sustain the kind of faith that we need to allow God to work in our lives the way we know he does, because he cares for his own. That's it. If you're not a Christian tonight, I'd like to encourage you to become one. As I've said it since I've been here, I can't do anything for you. I don't have any power to save you. I don't have any power to condemn you. But I can point to the one who can do both. And if you'll choose salvation, he is most willing. As we talked about last night, he is long-suffering, not willing that any should perish, but that all should come to repentance. Let us help you tonight in your obedience, if you'd make that known as we stand and as we sing.